It's about to get pretty gnarly in here, dude. Are you ready for Amelia's weekly fish fry? I hope you are. Aloha! I'm EE Journal's podcast and big kahuna, Amelia Dalton. And in this week's episode, we're in an epic paddle battle to catch that next Mondo wave of computerization. What is the next big thing, and how are we going to get there? My first guest is David Dutton, CEO of Silvaco, and he's here to help us navigate these rough electronic seas to find that next perfect wave. David and I are talking FinFETs, advanced model development, reducing netlists, process simulation, the works. Check it out. My guest is Dave Dutton from Silvaco. Thank you so much for joining me, Dave.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here, Amelia.
So welcome to Fish Fry. Just in case my audience doesn't know, what is Silvaco all about?
So Silvaco is a private company. We're headquartered in Silicon Valley, California. We've been around for 30 years, so we've kind of been through the whole growth of the EDA industry. And speaking of that, we do what's called electronic design automation, which helps design and verify semiconductors. And Silvaco has the capability to do everything what's called from TCAD or process simulation all the way through to verification. And recently we've added intellectual property or IP as well.
So let's talk about FinFETs. The lithography challenge there, the raw design size, it seems like the latest advanced process nodes bring challenges that make EDA's role more critical than ever. Do you think so?
Absolutely. And in fact, we've spent the last year in one area that we think is becoming more critical. And it's really the challenge around simulation and the netlist and the number of parameters you have to deal with. And so netlists are becoming so large that the simulation time, both in optimizing the flow and in the verification process, is becoming really unwieldy and prohibitive to design. So there's areas like called FastBice, which helps improve the speed, but then you reduce the accuracy or confidence in the outcome. So we've added a number of tools, both through our organic development or acquisition, that not only bring things like FastBice to us, but have also brought in as well areas such as RC reduction tool and circuit comparative tools to help reduce netlists, high sigma and advanced Monte Carlo tools to help reduce the number of spice with while keeping accuracy. So those type of things. So we've generated a whole portfolio around this that we feel is very critical. Another area is just advanced model development and continuing to see that go forward. And so we're one of the founding members of the Berkeley Device Model Center, which Professor Chaiming Hu is heading up. And that we see as critical because the reality is advanced models take years and years to develop before you see them get certified and become, you know, a compact model for the industry. And probably another area that's critical is using process simulation to really help kind of confirm that a model works or what you want to do, because the cost of silicon and the ability to really physically verify is becoming almost prohibitive these days until you're really sure you have the right design. So there's a few areas, and I think that the list just goes on and on, but that's really the area Silvaco's focused on.
So let's get into another topic, IoT. What do you think are the particular challenges that IoT brings to the table, especially when it comes to process nodes?
I think that's an area that's probably more opinions than there are IoT devices yet. But the reality is I think IoT continues to drive forward, and you see, I think, kind of a bifurcation in IoT. You have some areas that really use older nodes, middle nodes as we sometimes call them, and some areas, especially, you don't think about it, but you still need the high-end servers, the data centers and such that require really very advanced nodes. And so there's a lot of challenges in satisfying both those markets, and especially the middle node markets, where there's challenges to power consumption and RF being more critical. And then even how do you do memory and the type of embedded memory and how much that's going to consume and then IP. So I think one of the challenges is to keep costs low. People are trying to what I call reuse designs. But as you kind of take a design and try and implement some low power capabilities or, you know, ultra low power, you know, you're really trying to just stretch design, it doesn't quite work. And so people are finding they have to redesign. And so we think you're going to see a lot more design requirements and a lot more designs coming out of the IoT middle nodes. And I think that's one of the challenges that people need to understand as well. Long term for IoT is also just being able to see more standards in the industry. So we know what we're designing to. I think right now, there's a lot of demand, but they're using multiple OS. You know, there's not a standard OS. There's not standard communication. Another area is designing, if you will, onboard power, because power becomes more and more critical. And you think about tens of million devices proliferated, say, out in the world, out in agricultural fields. If you start to say, okay, a 10-year battery life replacement, that's still thousands of battery replacements per day, and it becomes untenable. So dealing with those kind of design challenges and what you have to put on the chip and how much memory you can put on the chip versus having to have, say, the operating system resident on the side, we'd like to get to where that's all together. So I think those type of things are all the challenges in IoT that are really ahead before we see IoT become probably more galvanized and driver of the next wave of computerization.
All right, Dave, it's time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, I know you enjoy boating and you have a 40-footer. Where in the world is the best place that you've ever taken your boat?
Probably for me, I've made a couple runs up and down the California coast, and depends on how you look at it. So one of the toughest places is going around Point Conception, and it can get pretty crazy seas there. And we've been through in those times, and it's been a bit white knuckle while you go through, but it's a happy experience when you're done. But in the other times when the seas are really calm, especially like going up around the, you know, Central California, just past Morro Bay and stuff, it's absolutely beautiful. So we kind of keep our boat up in Northern California for 4 to 5 years, and then we'll take it back down to Southern California for that time. And I enjoy really the trip more than when the boat's in the other places in between. So that's been my favorite time, is just up and down the coast.
Excellent. Well, it was a pleasure speaking with you, David. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you very much, Amelia. I really enjoyed this.
For the next big wave, you know what else we're going to need? Lots and lots of board wax, just day. And bandwidth. And some really awesome IP to go along with that bandwidth. But good IP is only as good as the company that built it, right? And don't get me started on that ARM business. Anyway, what if your IP was not only tested, but also used in-house? Please welcome Lisa Minwell from eSilicon. Lisa and I are headed toward that big monster wave with 2.1D designs in our sights and high-speed SerDes at our backs. Let's go. Hi, Lisa. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So, Lisa, let's talk about eSilicon. Now, you guys are known for your ASIC business, but you've also got an IP division as well. So, why offer IP in addition to your ASICs, and what are the components of an IP business?
Good question. About 5 or 6 years ago, eSilicon realized that to build a superior ASIC, there was a need to have IP available that could be optimized for a particular market segment. So a lot of the ASICs that we do are in the networking space. They're very large ASICs. They're very high speed. They require a lot of bandwidth. So we have a lot of high speed SerDes on our ASICs. These are 400 square millimeter type chips. And with that, the physical IP is also really critical. They have many times 40, 50% of these chips are embedded SRAM. And so that really dominates the characteristics of the spec of the chip. So when you're trying to meet high speed, typically there'll be one, two, or a handful of embedded SRAMs that might be affecting meeting your speed target. So having the ability to have that SRAM developed in-house where you can modify it, tweak it a little bit, optimize it for this particular design yields really great results. Also, when you're doing that, being able to save on area and power where necessary is also really helpful, even in wired designs. So from a physical IP perspective, we find that having the ability to enhance embedded SRAM is really key. The other aspect to that IP business is looking at emerging memory technologies such as high bandwidth memory, the need for bandwidth as the cloud is expanding. So again, around that same time, about 5 years ago, we started looking at solutions not just from an IP perspective, but also from a packaging perspective on how we could get more bandwidth. And high bandwidth memory and 2.5D solutions were another aspect to this IP business.
All right, Lisa, let's talk about HBM. Now, what does eSilicon bring to the table for these 2.5D designs? And how does eSilicon see the HBM market progressing?
Yes, as far as what eSilicon brings to the table for 2.5D solutions, in the fact that we are an ASIC provider and an IP provider, we can bring a complete solution. So when we develop the HBM-PHY, for example, we bring world-class design capabilities to that PHY. We are using our own PHY in our designs. So where our biggest critic is eSilicon. Clearly, from a design perspective, we know what that IP needs to perform like. We also know what it needs to be as an IP, how it needs to be usable for our customers. And then with that, how to test that IP and validate it in a complete system. So what we do is we actually create an ASIC test chip, if you will, with the PHY, and we used a 2.5D packaging solution with an interposer to an external HBM stack, and we actually test that complete system for our customers. So we test the IP as well as its connection to the external stack, which is something that many people, many IP providers do not have the capability of doing.
So Lisa, do you think there will be 2.1D designs, and what will they look like?
Yeah, I do. I think that right now, the 2.5D packaging is rather expensive to many customers. It requires additional assembly steps, and so the expense is a little bit high. But what we see is that there'll be some newer technology using build-ups or different types of build-up substrates that are cheaper. And once that happens, it'll enable more customers to be able to use this type of solution. The other thing that we're seeing a lot of need for chip-to-chip communication. We've been asked by customers who kind of want to get their toe in the water, if you will, with high bandwidth memory. So they want to be able to use a PHY that would enable them to talk to an external HBM stack or talk to another chip. So we've been seeing this type of configurability requests. I think really a handful of them have come in the last month or so. So there's a lot of thrashing out there on trying to figure out how to be able to get more bandwidth in deep learning and in networking, and chip-to-chip communication seems to be coming hot.
Okay, so I know that eSilicon has a series of online tools, but what's different about your Star Navigator for IP analysis and delivery? What's the difference maker there?
Our STAR online tools offer our customers the ability to generate quotes, for example, for MPWs. We've had a record number of tapeouts in the last month for MPWs. Along that line, we have the STAR Navigator tool. This is a tool that enables our customers to look at all of the IP that eSilicon has developed. And with that, it's across multiple technologies, multiple foundries. And what's a little bit different about Star Navigator than maybe some other IP suppliers is that for our memories, we actually preload PPA sweeps across the full compiler. So, for example, if a single-port SRAM compiler on, let's say, TSMC 28 HBM technology or HPC technology, this can generate thousands of instances, and many times marketers or customers kind of want to get an idea, well, how fast would a particular instance in this technology run, or what would be the power of that? Instead of them having to go through the process of figuring out how to generate that instance and downloading the data sheet and reading it to find out its parameters, they can actually just quickly look at a graph, and the graph, it updates immediately. So they can compare and look at different technologies. So you could even load a couple of different architectures and look at what a single-port SRAM would look like compared to a dual-port SRAM, or what a 28-nanometer technology would look like compared to a 40. And it just makes it very easy for our customers to be able to do that analysis. And, of course, they're able to generate instances for a complete project. They can download the front-end views, and then when they are ready, if they want to actually purchase, we're turning on a purchasing module here in the next quarter that will enable our customers to purchase the IP online. So that's really exciting.
Excellent. Well, Lisa, it's time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, I know you enjoy cooking in your free time, so what's your signature dish? What is the one thing you can cook better than everything else?
Well, I can't say that it's better than everything else, but I'll tell you, I'm married and I'm the mother of three. Of course, they're grown now, but living in Texas, our staple has been a really good steak. So I like to cook a sirloin steak with some grilled Brussels sprouts or asparagus and a huge salad, and that would be the go-to meal here at our house.
That sounds good. Well, Lisa, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And hey, if Google Plus is your thing, you can also join our circle on Google Plus. We also have a YouTube channel, keyword EE Journal, chock full of all kinds of techie videos, our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series, and our video series called On the Scene. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can also grab our Fish Fryin' RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Fryin' page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com. Or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of August 5th, 2016, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.